welcome to episode 141 of the Marvel Studios News Podcast. My name is Sean Gerber, joined by Paul Herman. How you doing, Paul?
I am doing very, very well. Lots of crazy stuff happening in the world of Marvel, so yeah, I'm excited to talk about it.
Yeah, it's a big news day. I mean, I know that this may not be as flashy as a Spider-Man deal, but we are recording this episode on October 15th, 2019, which may prove to be, I mean, I think it's already an historic day for Marvel, but it may prove to be a really significant day. It may prove to be even more significant than it might seem today as things continue to develop. But if you haven't heard by now, you've probably heard. Kevin Feige, Marvel Studios President Kevin Feige, has a new title or an additional title. He is now Chief Creative Officer, Marvel at the Walt Disney Company. So we're going to get into that topic. And we are fortunate to have a guest with us returning from episode 90 in August of last year, in which we talked about Marvel Studios the next 10 years instead of like the first 10 years that they were doing all of last year for the 10th anniversary. David Rosen is back with us. David, welcome back to Marvel Studios News. How are you?
Good. Good to be back on this day.
Yeah, it's a
picked a good episode.
Definitely. It just worked out. We thought that we were going to be talking a little bit about Martin Scorsese, and then we just realized that
Scorsese who?
Yeah, you know. Well, no matter how great the filmmaker, it doesn't mean they're not capable of saying dumb things. And we got other stuff to talk about that's much bigger news and much more relevant, and that is this Kevin Feige stuff. So let's go through some of it, and we're gonna go through all of it. But let's just start with let's set the stage here for what's happening. So Deadline broke this story today. All the other trades subsequently, you know, confirmed it because it looked like Disney was supplying some info on this. So Kevin Feige, in terms of who his bosses are, that's still the same. He's still reporting to Walt Disney Studios co-chairman Alan Horn and Alan Bergman. What's different, though, because he's obviously, and he's still overseeing Marvel Studios, still in charge of the feature films, still in charge of the Disney Plus series, but what's different now is that all creative executives across film, TV, and even comic books now are going to report to Kevin Feige. So that means Marvel Television, which was previously headed by Jeff Loeb, more on him as we go on in the show. Marvel Family Entertainment, which covers the animation that Marvel does, so like Ultimate Spider-Man, or now it's just Spider-Man and the other shows that we've seen on Disney XD. And then Marvel Publishing, which includes Marvel Comics. So another part of this is that Marvel TV and Marvel Family Entertainment are said to be moving under the Marvel Studios banner. So that may mean that there's only one banner now for all Marvel content. So we'll have to speculate about exactly what that may mean. Now, we're going to talk about the Marvel Comics stuff a little bit later on, so there's more to talk about and more to set the stage for in terms of the executive structure for Marvel comic books. So we will talk about that a little bit later on in the show. But let's go ahead and start with the film and TV portion of this, as well as animation. I mean, this is huge news. I mean, we speculated a couple of weeks ago. We talked about the Ghost Rider news. The Ghost Rider went away on Hulu. It was going to be a project that was developed in tandem with the Hellstrom series on Hulu, and it went away. And we acknowledged and even had a little bit of fun with the conspiracy theories there that maybe, just maybe, this had something to do with Marvel Studios and possibly having plans for Ghost Rider, and maybe it wasn't. Maybe that had something to do with Ghost Rider going away, and that it wasn't all just the usual blanket excuse of creative differences that was given between Hulu and the showrunners of not being able to sync up on what was supposed to happen with what everybody wanted from the Ghost Rider series, and then ultimately decided to part ways on it. We wondered if maybe there was something going on there with Marvel Studios. We still don't know what the truth is there, but at least now we know that these decisions are going to be up going forward. These decisions are definitely up to Kevin Feige, because he is overseeing this entire operation in terms of television and film, as he already was. And so with Marvel Studios, if it's only going to be one banner, I really wonder what this means. I mean, Marvel Television was already kind of in a bad way because Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is done. I mean, they haven't aired the last season, but they've already made it, so it's done. It's about to be over. They just have to show the final episodes. And then you've got Runaways on Hulu, which is still going, and you've got Cloak & Dagger on Freeform. But both of those shows are approaching their third seasons, and which is not to say that's not ancient in the world of television, so they could presumably go on for several more. But maybe they're not gonna. And this Hellstrom series, which just announced the cast, I think, last week they started putting out the cast for that? I don't know if they're going to get to make that show. I mean, it seems to me like it would be kind of weird. I mean, the idea of there being two Marvel universes within Disney. I know there's another Marvel universe that Sony's trying to put together, but within the Walt Disney Company, we've had two universes. We've had the true MCU from Marvel Studios, and we've had the it's all connected but not really Marvel Television universe on across ABC and Hulu and Freeform and Netflix, sort of. Of course, we know the Netflix stuff is all done. And so with Marvel Television, I mean, being down to so few series, I mean, it felt like maybe they were going to be winding down and they weren't going to have so many opportunities for live action. And now, I don't know why you would have, I totally get why you wouldn't have a Marvel Television banner and you would just go with Marvel Studios because if you're going to have one guy overseeing the operation, why would you have two separate universes? The only reason I can think of would be if you're going to have an R-rated / TVMA banner that maybe accommodates characters like Deadpool and maybe addresses some other characters that could be developed that maybe wouldn't go on Disney Plus because that's supposed to be more family-friendly. So maybe there still would be a separate label, but I don't know that that would be an entirely separate operation within Marvel. So I think this move makes a lot of sense. I think it promotes the idea of if Marvel's going to do anything in live action, it's going to be canon with the MCU. That's kind of my expectation at this point, outside of the stuff that's already been made or being made and might get to finish its run or something like that. But most new projects I anticipate are going to be canon going forward, except maybe animation. Animation is not guaranteed to be canon because we already have a Marvel Studios What If animated show that plays with the mythology of the MCU but isn't actually canon with it. But in terms of live action, I'm feeling like everything's going to be canon. What do you think, David?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny because I don't, not to bring up the comparisons, but with Joker just coming out, people talking about these small, isolated movies and saying, maybe Marvel should think about doing that. And here we get this news today where it just seems like the MCU is getting bigger and bigger and more connected. So that was kind of the first thing I thought about when this news broke. The other thing I thought about was that, I'm thinking about, Bob Iger and Kevin Feige are both visionaries. And they're looking to the future, obviously.
Yeah.
And with, Disney Plus coming, Feige was already taken on a huge workload. And on top of that, I think you mentioned this, but Netflix is over and the Netflix shows are over. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is wrapping up. And they might have just seen this as an opportunity to bring everything under one roof and not kind of let these other shows spin out. I mean, I don't know what they're going to do with Runaways. I have been keeping up, so maybe they could keep that in the MCU because it really just happens in a small corner. And right now there's not necessarily a reason for them to reference everything else or for the larger MCU to know about Runaways, what's going on there. So I could maybe see them, grandfathering in or backdooring that show in. But in general, it just seems like it seems like the right time to kind of halt everything else. And just Kevin Feige's been great at building this universe, and it just seems like the right time to let him really just oversee everything.
What do you think, Paul? Are you still chewing a gummy bear?
I was just drinking a Diet Coke. My bad. I didn't know when David was going to be done. I apologize. sorry, audience. So the thing is with the Kevin Feige announcement, it wasn't. The fact he's being overcharged of, again, we're going to say small here, television, overseeing television now. Let's be honest. It's not exactly a complete shock. We saw this kind of coming already. And let's be real. I think that it's only a good thing that they're doing this, obviously, because we're going to get a more, like what David so elegantly said, he's going to it broaden, not exactly words here, David, but you're making the universe bigger.
Yep.
And he's going to take everything in and make it more cohesive. Because I'll be honest, watching Inhumans, watching Runaways, Cloak and Dagger, a lot of these shows, even on Netflix, it was hard for me to get through on some of these. Even on Punisher, I made it through Punisher, but just because I'm like, I have to watch Marvel, these Marvel shows. And I loved Bernthal as Punisher, But again, it was such an isolated thing by itself that I don't love The Punisher enough to really invest me in like 10 hours of, or whatever it was, 13 hours of watching that show for me. Just like it was, I watched all of Cloak and Dagger's first season except the final episode, and I just didn't care enough. It was not a bad show, but because it was such an isolated thing and it had no real real tight connected tissue to the MCU, it had some Netflix stuff to it, and because it's such a broad, we're a superhero show, but not really a superhero show, it got tiresome.
Yeah.
And for me, what I want to do, or what I'll, and I think what most of us want, I'm assuming most of us want, not everyone, but I'd say a lot of people, most people, they want a connected universe that calls directly to, just like how it said, how they kind of promoted it as it's all connected. They wanted to have that all together. Mm-hmm. And with Kevin Feige doing this and him being overseeing the television aspect, among other things, it really has a chance to really dive into that and say, hey, we are all connected now. This is for sure. These are the callbacks. This is, you know, they can really tailor everything to being one connected thing. And I think that is what fans have wanted. And again, like Dave, you brought up a good point too about the Joker. You know, Marvel could do that. You're right. And I think that maybe in 10, 15 years, you could get that. But right now, that's not what people expect out of Marvel. People expect things to be connected, and they want a connected universe because that's what they've been watching for 10 years. And the TV kind of played with that idea. And I think it was successful. People wanted to get into it. But again, Kevin Feige just wasn't exactly a part of it because of the whole like Perlmutter thing, mm-hmm. whatever. So with all of this, we're like David said again, we're going to get a more connected, bigger universe. And I think that is what you're talking about, the streaming wars, and you're talking about movie theaters dying, and why even bring up Scorsese and why he's like, these are all theme parks. And, you know, there's a reason why I think so many people are getting upset about these films that are old schools, because they feel like they're being driven out of the theater or whatever. But let's be real, right now the market is shifting. Everything is shifting around these streaming services. Yeah. And let's be real, the more connected you make these TV series to these films, makes people want to go see those films, and, you know, instead of waiting for the streaming service, because you'll be building it up on the streaming service with these television series. So Kevin, I feel, is really almost like he's cutting edge in a sense to where these franchises, like a Star Wars now too, because they have The Mandalorian, that's canon with the films as well. Mm-hmm. Now you give people a reason to watch these shows on the streaming service, and then you also build from those streaming services TV series, like a She-Hulk, a Moon Knight, a Miss Marvel, and you bring it up to now the mainstream movies and have it built up there, and you have your movies too kind of play off each other. It's brilliant. And I think right now what he's created with the MCU and the films, he brings to the TV. Now he can fully bring to the TV and really expand that. And I think that, to me, and Marvel has always embraced its continuity, going back to the original with Fantastic Four, with Stan Lee. He wanted to make everything connected, and he did a great job, obviously, and him and Jack Kirby and all the other, Steve Ditko, everyone else, Bill Everett, all that stuff. They did a great job of integrating the whole universe together, and Kevin Feige is taking that to film, right? Well, now he's taking it to TV and film, and he's bringing it to like full on what the Marvel universe kind of always was at its start in the 1960s. So it's a big deal, obviously, just that portion alone, amongst other things.
Yeah, I mean, it's monumental to have everything. Well, I mean, in some ways, this brings Marvel back together under Kevin Feige, because Marvel Studios was still directly part of Marvel for, you know, the initial phase, no pun intended, of its existence. And then in May of 2015, that was when, according to, you know, that's the date that Bob Iger listed in his book, that was when Iger made the call that, you know, that Marvel Studios was going to be moved away from the rest of Marvel Entertainment. And so Marvel Studios, with, you know, under the leadership of Kevin Feige, would report directly to Alan Horn. And now it's, you know, eventually became Alan Horn and Alan Bergman. And so, you know, Marvel's kind of been separate, and now Marvel is, you know, back together. I mean, it's still not everything is kind of stitched together in the way that it, you know, the way that it eventually could be, but it's definitely a lot more unified under Kevin Feige, under this new structure. And it just makes sense. I mean, I know when stuff like this comes up, and and somebody is getting more power, more authority, more responsibility, that there's inevitably the thing of like, oh, does this person really deserve it? Well, I think this is something that, I mean, this is an opportunity. This is a level of authority and responsibility that Kevin Feige has earned over time. I mean, he's led the Marvel Cinematic Universe into being the biggest, most popular franchise in the world. And in that process has helped lead the Walt Disney Company and the Walt Disney Studios to their biggest years ever at the box office. So he's earned this position. And if we're comparing the results from Marvel Studios to Marvel Television, I mean, the business results, I mean, it's obviously different things because you're talking about TV / streaming revenue for Marvel Television versus box office revenue and so many other sort of revenue streams for Marvel Studios and the merchandise and everything that gets connected to these films. But even creatively, the results. I mean, the Marvel Cinematic Universe and the Marvel Studios productions have been more consistent in terms of the overall quality of the show, of the movies that Marvel Studios has delivered. That's been more consistent than the Marvel Television shows. And I say this as somebody who is a fan of the Marvel Television shows and has continued, who stuck with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. through day one and will stick with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. all the way through the final season. I've been keeping up with the show on a week-to-week basis, and so I've enjoyed that. I've enjoyed a lot of the Netflix stuff, all three seasons of Daredevil, the first season of Jessica Jones. I enjoyed both seasons of Punisher. I enjoyed the first season of Luke Cage. I even enjoyed the second season of Luke Cage more than most did. But there were also two bad seasons of Iron Fist, a bad season of The Defenders, which really should have been something great, and it just wasn't. And then you have, the second and third season of Jessica Jones. Really not great. So... and that's to say nothing of Inhumans, which was just an absolute disaster, and yet somehow still going to be on Disney Plus. I don't get it. Anyway, the results haven't quite been there. And if Marvel Television was, you know, and the other thing in terms of results is just the viewership on Marvel Television shows. It's been good enough. Well, although Agent Carter is a creative success, I think, from Marvel Television, although, you know, Marvel Studios was perhaps more involved in that one than any other show that Marvel Television has done. So maybe there's a little bit of that might be part of the reason there. But, I mean, the results, obviously, you can't call Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. a failure from a business perspective because it will finish with 7 seasons. I know the season 6 and 7 are basically half, are just only a little more than half the length each of a normal season. So just call that 6 seasons then, 6 full seasons of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. That's still a really good run for a television show. There's no such thing as a 6-season failure for a television show on a major broadcast network like ABC. But at the same time, just because it hasn't been a failure doesn't mean it's been this triumphant success in terms of the numbers. It started out really well, but it could not retain its audience, and then it finally hit a baseline that ABC decided was still acceptable, and so they've kept it on. So it's been a success, but more of a moderate success than anything else. And even the Netflix stuff, while Netflix doesn't really release numbers very often unless it's something very positive, you know, third-party analytics firms have been reporting that the viewership on the Marvel shows was dropping significantly from one season to the next. And so Marvel Television hasn't really demonstrated an ability to retain a very large audience with these shows. And, you know, so I don't think it's even about the... I don't really know that it's the lack of connection that's harming them. I mean, it probably doesn't help. But at the same time, I mean, these shows just haven't been that great. I mean, a show like Cloak & Dagger, which I think is a perfectly solid young adult series, is not a great Marvel superhero series to me. It just isn't. Like, when I gave it a few episodes, and it as a teen drama, I think it's a perfectly good teen drama. Outside of that, it wasn't really engaging. I didn't find it all that engaging. So I'm glad that there's an audience for it. I'm not the audience for it, and that's totally okay. But, you know, it limits what the audience is for that show. Runaways, kind of the same thing, although I did like Runaways better than Cloak & Dagger. And yet, somehow, after watching the first season, I never actually went back and watched season 2 of Runaways. So they just haven't really inspired me. And it's not based on the lack of connection, because I was still happy to watch the Netflix shows, even as it became more and more apparent that they weren't, actually connected to the MCU, as long as they were still good, I enjoy them. I didn't enjoy, like, went into the third season of Daredevil knowing full well that this stuff isn't really connected to the MCU, and still enjoyed the hell out of that third season of Daredevil because it was good, and it was just fine and still great on its own. But the quality hasn't been consistent across the board at Marvel Television, and so Kevin Feige has led Marvel Studios to a level of consistency that Marvel Television just hasn't achieved. And that's why I think they're, you know, he's now overseeing the television operation. And it just makes sense at this point. I mean, I'm not saying that Marvel will never do things that aren't part of a universe. As I said, there could potentially be a need for or a market for, and they would embrace a market for mature or R-rated stuff. They've already said, whether that's Bob Iger or Alan Horn or Kevin Feige, all of them have talked about, you know, Deadpool still being able to be R-rated, even as Marvel Studios continues to work with the character. But they've also said, and Iger has said, they would need to put a separate label on that so that people know what's up. So there could still be a separate label, and a separate label may also mean a separate continuity or timeline. We don't know exactly how all that's going to be integrated yet. All we know is that Ryan Reynolds visited Marvel Studios recently. That's all we know. We don't know anything else in terms of how that's going to come together. So there may be a separate level or a separate label for that purpose, and that could include TV or streaming projects that, you know, TVMA will not be on Disney Plus, so maybe Marvel Studios will make TVMA stuff that goes on Hulu, and maybe that's similar to what Marvel Television was doing, hopefully more consistent from a quality perspective, but similar structurally to what Marvel Television did with the Defenders series on Netflix. And then for animation, this is one that I'm really curious about what that's going to be, because animation is so, I mean, it's quite literally a different medium. So it's, I mean, it's still storytelling and it's still serialized, but I don't know if I'm curious if Marvel's going to actually make animated shows that would be canon with the MCU. I kind of doubt it, because the break between animation and live action feels like a very natural dividing line. So in terms of what's canon and what's not, if it's a cartoon, it's not canon. If it's live action, it is canon. So I think that would be, you know, I wouldn't surprise me if the animated stuff remains separate from the MCU proper. But as I said, they've already kind of set that expectation with What If. So the animation side, I mean, I think Marvel Animation is actually pretty underrated in recent years, so I don't know that there was as much of a need for that. But if you're rolling everything else under Kevin Feige's supervision anyway, you might as well make animation part of it. But the other thing that we might see, though, is maybe we won't see quite as many shows. I mean, I know we're going to see a lot of Disney Plus series, but, you know, we were about to see anywhere from 2 to 4 Disney Plus series in a given year, and now, and plus a bunch of Marvel Television series, presumably, or at least that would have been the goal from Marvel Television's perspective. Yeah. Maybe we're not going to see as much of it, because it's just going to be the Disney Plus stuff, and then maybe a few other things here and there, as I said, for TVMA stuff or animated shows or whatever. But I don't expect Marvel Studios to try and be as prolific in terms of the number of things that they might develop at a given time to all come out within the same time period as Marvel Television. Like, I think it's going to be, although, I mean, there's already more Disney Plus series coming out in 2021 than ever came out in a single year for Marvel Television. Well, but yeah. I don't expect there to now be the same level of output that there would have been if Marvel Studios and Marvel Television had been kept separate.
Well, I kind of see this as, I think what to expect from this is the same thing that we can expect to see what happened when Disney acquired Fox. And that, you know, it wasn't just like Disney bought Fox, and then all of a sudden they're just going to put out all the movies that Fox was going to put out, but with the Disney label slapped in front of it. You know, they canceled a lot of stuff. Like you said, Disney is focused a lot on quality. Like I mentioned earlier before we started, I'm reading Bob Iger's book, though, when he made his pitch to the Disney board to take over as CEO. He kept talking about, I actually have this quoted. He said, you know, in an age where more and more content is being created and distributed, we need to bet on the fact that quality is going to matter more and more.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of think that's what's going on here a little bit.
Yeah.
Feige is taking a page from Bob Iger's book, in that, you know, with now that basically the entire world saw Avengers Endgame, and, you know, Marvel Studios is in the public eye more so than ever right now, I think they really need to focus on branding. You know, when Iger came into Disney, his whole focus was on brand and rebuilding the Disney brand. And, you know, they can't, you know, Disney can't really do much with what Sony has, because we all know what Sony supposedly has planned for the SUMC. But they can control everything that Marvel has. And I think pulling Marvel Television under Feige gives them that much more control, gives them much more quality control. And, you know, if they don't, just like, you know, Disney may not, isn't going to put out every Fox movie, they may only just put out the best movies. And I feel like, you know, right now Kevin Feige isn't going to put out every show that Marvel Television was planning, but they may just focus on what the best stuff they have and make that part of the MCU.
I don't even know if there's, like, I think it would be a mistake at this point to try and retrofit other things into the MCU. Like, oh, please go catch up on Runaways and Cloak and Dagger because we're kind of sort of going to make this part of the MCU. I think stuff needs to be developed from the ground up as being part of the universe. If it's going to be part of the universe, if something's going to be separate, then fine, let it be separate. But anything that's supposed to be in universe, I think, should be designed that way from the get-go. I mean, I suppose it's early enough that if they really wanted to do that with Hellstrom, they could. But I don't think so. It won't surprise me if we find out that Hellstrom's not happening at this point.
It's like New Mutants.
Yeah, I mean, well, except, yeah, you know, New Mutants, they already shot. I mean, they haven't shot Hellstrom yet. I mean, maybe, I don't know if they've started production yet or not. I mean, they could have because they announced the cast, but they're not pot committed on that. I mean, that they would have only barely started at most, so they could definitely back out of that one, I think, if they wanted to. So
this is the pilot, right? That's all they're
It's ordered straight to series. So it's supposed to be, I think, 10 episodes or something like that that they're supposed to be making. But, you know, if you know, TV production is usually, you know, like 1 week per episode usually. So, I mean, they maybe at most have filmed an episode. So, I mean, I think they can ditch it if they want to. I mean, it's just it almost feels like a lame duck thing, though. I guess it depends on what they're doing. Like, is everything, as we might naturally suspect, is everything going to be part of the MCU canon? If it is, then why have this brand new show that's about to not be canon and it's already out of date by the time it actually lands on Hulu? It's one thing for Runaways and Cloak and Dagger, which are already going and already have stories that audiences, you know, even if it may not be as big of an audience as the movies or may eventually be on the Disney Plus shows, at least there are audiences there that like those shows and are invested in those stories and should see, you know, a nice conclusion brought to those stories before they just go away. Hellstrom is not in that situation. It you know, that's why I think it's a lot more vulnerable. And anything that's in the development slate for Marvel Television, not stuff that's already been made or about to be made, but just the stuff that Marvel Television hoped that it would make, all of that stuff, I mean, I don't think if you're Kevin Feige, you throw it all away sight unseen. Those are the things, because you haven't made it yet, you can look at it and you can evaluate it and say, okay, is there anything here that we think is good enough that we want to try and adapt now and turn into a Marvel Studios / MCU project? And if there is, go ahead, great, and do it. And if there's not, then you just throw it away because there's really not much that's been invested in it at that point, and you just start over with other new stuff. Because that's we've heard about several Disney Plus series from Marvel Studios, but you got to know there's several more that we haven't heard about yet. So you know that Marvel Studios already has their own stuff in development. So how open are they to the stuff that Marvel Television was developing, and how necessary do they feel that is? Because, you know, to your point, David, and the whole quality issue, well, it's quality over quantity, but Marvel Studios already has plenty of quantity and they can deliver the quality in terms of how much they've got going on now between the movies and the Disney Plus series. So I think that in looking at this, I mean, I don't expect there to be, I just have a hard time seeing Kevin Feige and the team investing a bunch of time to keep another universe going just for the sake of having some stuff for Hulu. That's, you know, like it doesn't really make sense unless it's really serving a different audience. Like, there's the thought process of, you know, everybody just needs as much content as they can have, but I don't really know that that's true. I mean, I think that what you really do need the quality, because I think, you know, when I think about my own Netflix subscription, it's based on a handful of shows that keep me subscribed to Netflix. It's not based on Netflix has brand new shows every week and that's why I subscribe. I don't watch all those shows. I don't watch that many. So like for Disney Plus and Marvel Studios, it's the same thing. You don't want to have a bunch of Marvel stuff on Hulu just for the sake of having Marvel stuff on Hulu, because you think that's going to draw people. if they're not good, it's not going to draw people. We've already seen that with Marvel Television. Just because you have the Marvel name on it doesn't mean an audience is going to watch it. It doesn't mean that an audience is going to care. It's got to be good. And it also helps. It does help if it's connected to the universe. I don't think it totally has to be, but it might as well be if it's all being made by the same team. So I unless, as I said, there is that universal exception of TVMA R-rated stuff that could serve a different purpose. But outside of that, and even that stuff, it could still be, even if it's a, you know, even if it has a separate label, it could still be part of the MCU, but in a way that we thought the Netflix stuff was going to be. Like it's still part of it, but we don't. But Marvel Studios, you know, is much more sensitive and perhaps crafty about how they connect that, because you don't. What you definitely don't want is you don't want like 8-year olds saying, you know, Mom, I want to watch, you know, I want to watch the Deadpool movie because I want to watch Deadpool because they're talking about what happened in his movie in this PG-13 Avengers movie, and then Mom puts on Deadpool and doesn't pay attention to the fact that it's R-rated. It's her fault for not looking at the rating, but she's going to blame Disney because that's the way it always goes. And so, or Dad blames Disney or whoever. Like, it's going to be, you know, it that kind of stuff. I think it's a little bit tricky for Marvel Studios, so they got to be careful about those kinds of things. But you know, so I wouldn't blame them if the universe connections between PG-13 content and TVMA/R-rated content is more, if those are more tangential and not as significant as they otherwise could be. But everything that's in the PG-13 space or TV-14 or whatever the ratings are on Disney Plus, like those things might as well be canon with one another, because it's just going to, and you focus on the quality and make sure that the stuff is good. So then you have quality standalone stories that also have these connections to the universe, which is what they've been doing in movies for very successfully for the past 11 years.
I think that what they could do with Hulu and Disney Plus and maybe having Kevin oversee everything is that you maybe won't see. Well, first of all, let me step back here a minute. I think that you make a great point that they're not, I don't think they're going to bring anything out like a Runaways and just all of a sudden make it into the same continuity. I think Kevin is going to want to start fresh and build out. And what I think they're probably, and if Hulu wants to keep making a Runaways TV series, maybe Kevin will be like, yeah, it's fine. And I'm not going to worry about it. But one of the things that we got to do or got to think about is, are they going to branch out their products to different, you know, to different platforms, meaning like a Hulu and a Disney Plus. But pretty soon at some point you may have, like you said, a Hulu and a Disney Plus at the same time, where you say people, you know, will want to subscribe to both of them.
I think Hulu would be reserved for TVMA. It would be reserved for what can't, for anything that can't go on Disney Plus. If it can go on Disney Plus, it's going there.
So, like, again, going back to, like, the Blade. We know Blade is coming. And this is where it gets – how are they going to cross-pollinate this a little bit? Because Blade is a very borderline, edgier kind of character that's going to be promoted into the Marvel Marvel MCU. And so with that and Ghost Rider and things like that, I think, to me, the Ghost Rider thing, it makes way more sense now that Kevin Feige is taking over everything. And this, to me, he probably as soon as he could stop this, because he was like, listen, no, we need to save this for what I want. And I got bigger plans for this. And I'm curious does that fit on Disney Plus? Does that fit on Hulu? But just under, again, what are they going to do with that? And I'm also wondering, if you do have multiple things, I think also, are they going to brand it? And I think this is where I think Kevin is probably, it looks like how they have that little fanfare at the very beginning. Mm-hmm. I think they're going to have something like that with, again, because Kevin's going to want to show that he is in charge and this is connected. And I feel that with him in charge, we're going to have more. It's going to be very obvious to people that it is connected. And how is it going to be so obvious? It remains to be seen. But again, Kevin, I kind of feel like Kevin's going to start branching out, because I think Blade is, to me, if without Blade, I'd probably say, yeah, it's all Disney Plus. But the fact that Blade is now created, I have to think there's a bigger plan in place with an edgier. Again, I don't know how you do it, but it seems to me, I don't know if that fits Disney Plus. It seems to me, like we talked this before, fits more Hulu than Disney Plus, just on the name recognition. I'm not saying it won't fit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but, Blade is going to be a feature film, so I mean, it's going to be PG-13. I don't anticipate being R-rated. So I mean, I think
just like Daredevil was, right? Daredevil was PG-13.
Well, and that's what it kind of points to. That's what that points to me, though, is like it's. I'm not, even though I'm saying that there is an exception of a possible TVMA/R-rated corner of the Marvel Universe that is covered in some feature films, perhaps, and on Hulu, potentially, I still don't know if they'll actually do that, because, like, how many characters do you actually need to do that for? Like, you don't have to do that for Blade. You don't have to do that for Ghost Rider. Can you? Yes. Do you have to? No. I mean, I would say that if I were going to pick something that Marvel Studios has already announced that feels more TVMA to me than anything else, it would actually be Moon Knight, and that's already been announced for Disney Plus, not Hulu. So if Moon Knight is going to be Disney Plus appropriate, then I don't know what they would, you know, what else would, where they would draw the line and say, this has to be, this needs to be the TVMA show. On Hulu, that's what makes me almost kind of doubt that potential exception that I've mentioned like a half dozen times by now. Like, I don't know if that's going to... I don't... Even though I acknowledge the existence of that potential exception, I don't know how confident I am in that actually happening. I mean, the only thing that really stands out to me is potentially still being R-rated is Deadpool, and maybe that's not going to happen. I mean, if Deadpool is going to be the only R-rated thing... Why? I mean, why keep it going as an R-rated thing if it's going to be, if it's literally the only R-rated thing? The only reason to do that is because, you know, when Marvel Studios met with Ryan Reynolds, if he said, look, I've only got one or two movies left on my contract and I'm not planning on signing an extension, so then you just say, okay, well, we're going to keep making Deadpool movies in the universe that you were a part of, not part of the MCU. We're not going to integrate your version of the character. You'll finish your run, and then we'll wait, and then eventually, if we want to use Deadpool, we'll start over again, and we'll start it fresh in the MCU. I don't think that's going to happen, because if that was the case, and Ryan Reynolds was about to be on his way out as the character, I don't know that he'd be sharing a photo of himself at Marvel Studios, so I think they are going to integrate that character into the MCU. And even though they've said, you know, that they can keep the character R-rated, there's a difference between saying you can do something or that you're willing to do something and then actually doing it, because they're still completely justified in saying, you know what, we ultimately thought it was a better idea to do this PG-13 movie. We had an idea for a movie and we had an idea for a concept that would be PG-13, and everybody's speculated about the same things that could be potentially funny, that Deadpool goes from an R-rated space, and because he's very aware and breaking the fourth wall and all that stuff, he goes from an R-rated space to a PG-13 movie. They start hitting the delay button and bleeping out his, you know, bleeping out the profanity. They can make the violence more, you know, and the blood and everything else more cartoonish and all of those things to make it kind of silly, and him actually reacting to that and acknowledging that that's what's happening. There's plenty of potential comedy that comes from that. So I don't know. I mean, it's all of that has potential, but if Moon Knight is on Disney Plus, it really makes me doubt that Marvel is planning on building an R-rated/TVMA corner of this thing. Maybe Deadpool gets to be the lone exception, and that's it. But as far as labeling, as you mentioned, Paul, I mean, Deadline did say it's all going under the Marvel Studios banner. So if it's one banner for everything, then I think the only exception would be the, you know, a different label for stuff that's going to be rated differently and should not be, you know, and try to have some signal that something is not, you know, appropriate for kids. Although, given that so many kids watch MCU movies and will be watching MCU stories, there should probably be a blatant warning that comes on the screen. Never mind a separate label. There should be a complete, like a huge title card and that bold lettering all across, like "Do not let the kids watch" or something like that. Or this program absolutely contains mature content. Yes, that means for your kid too. And then, you know, so parental discretion is strongly advised. Maybe they got to do something like that. But as far as everything else, I think the Marvel logo that goes on things is now going to be the Marvel Studios logo. Maybe animation will get its own separate logo if the stuff is going to be, if, as I suspect, perhaps not canon with the rest of the MCU. Although, who knows? Maybe we will get animated chapters of the MCU that are canon. I really can't rule that out either at this point. It's so hard to really figure out exactly how all of this is going to come together, but the one point I want to make sure I bring into this is that I mentioned Kevin Feige having, you know, earned this this opportunity to expand, you know, his responsibilities within within Marvel, within the Walt Disney Company. He's absolutely earned it, and I trust him with this. I mean, it's all about track record. I mean, it's not as we said before. We talked about you know, a couple weeks ago. We talked about Kevin Feige developing, you know, producing a Star Wars movie, and we talked about his potential future. And I even threw out the title of Chief Creative Officer. That was really more under the idea that he would oversee Marvel and Lucasfilm. I still think that can happen one day, and I think this might just be another step, as now he continues to take on more responsibility at Marvel, and if he continues to be as successful as he has been, then he can get additional responsibilities, and that may one day include Star Wars if there's an opening there. But as I also said, I don't expect him to ever leave Marvel behind. It's just adding Star Wars to his portfolio. That may happen one day, but the most important thing for me as a fan is that I trust him to do well in this position, and it is a lot. And we haven't even talked about comic books yet, and we're going to. But I trust him to be successful in this because he's earned that. It's not just as I said before. It's not just because the guy wears cool hats. It's not just because he's you know, a great master of ceremonies in Hall H at Comic Con or at D23 Expo or at El Capitan Theater 5 years ago to announce Phase 3. Yes, he's great at all of those things. And I love having him be kind of the face of the MCU and representing Marvel Studios to the public. And all of that's great, but it's the content that he's helped create, the content that he's overseen at Marvel Studios that's been so consistent, like so consistently great and culminated in such an extraordinary way in Avengers Endgame this year. I can't help but trust the guy in what he's done unless or until he gives me a reason not to trust that he's capable. But so far, he's been capable. Everything he touches has turned to gold with Marvel Studios. He's just done such a fantastic job, and I fully believe him to continue doing a fantastic job as he oversees stuff with, you know, television projects / Disney Plus, potentially Hulu, and then also Marvel Animation. I mean, I think the guy's just going to nail it. The part that is the most curious to me, though, is the comic book stuff. And Paul, I've been wondering all day what you were going to think about this. Because this, obviously, I mean, it's a medium that we care very much about, and I know you care very, very much about. And this is the thing that is so unlike what Kevin Feige has been doing. I mean, you can make the case that storytelling is storytelling, but different mediums are different mediums. And there's, I think there's more proximity in the translation of feature films to limited series on Disney Plus than there is, you know, the straightforward connection from feature films to comic books. It's a different animal, and he's never worked in this industry. And an important thing for people to remember about Kevin Feige, and I'm not assuming this about him, he has said this, like he's a movie fan first. He was a diehard movie fan who liked comic books, and then obviously had a lot of respect for the stories, the characters, the source material, and that has of course informed his choices in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and for the most part, I think it's been for the betterment of the Marvel Cinematic Universe that he's respected those things. But he's not really been a comic book guy and has never worked in this industry.
Right.
And now he has creative and editorial oversight of Marvel. But before I let you weigh in, I forgot I need to properly set the stage and let everybody know what's actually happening here and how this is structured. So
sure, go ahead.
Dan Buckley is the president of Marvel Entertainment. He has been, he will still be under this new executive structure. What's different is he will now report to two bosses. Previously, he was just reporting to Marvel CEO Ike Perlmutter. Now he will also report to Kevin Feige. And what is weird about this is that he will report to them for different things. So like different job responsibilities, even different sets of responsibilities within comic books, he's reporting to Perlmutter and Feige separately. So for creative and editorial, when it comes to Marvel publishing, including comics, Buckley will report to Feige. For publishing operations and then sales, creative services, also games are said to still be under Buckley or Perlmutter. So games, licensing, and events, that's for those kinds of things, Buckley will be also reporting to Ike Perlmutter. The rest of the executive structure currently at Marvel Entertainment / Marvel Comics, it remains unchanged, although we'll talk about Jeff Loeb, I guess, at the end. But from the comic book standpoint, no executives are changing right now. Maybe that shifts eventually. We'll see if there's any fallout from this. But right now, everybody stays the same. The only difference is for creative and editorial, Dan Buckley will now report to Kevin Feige, which means Kevin Feige will have direct oversight over the creative and editorial at Marvel Comics. This is very different. He's never worked in this industry, Paul. What do you think?
There's a lot to chew on with this, and I think I have my assumptions, and I think I know what they're going with. First of all, let's call it what this is too. They are pushing Ike Perlmutter out of this eventually, and this is the first major step. The fact that they got two bosses and that they're basically cutting him out of creative control, and you have to realize that I always will go back to that great, the untold history of the Marvel Universe or Marvel Comics, whatever it is, audiobook or book, whichever you prefer. I love audiobooks. Listen to it. And if you, at the end of the book or towards the end of the book, it kind of updates you kind of what the modern, right? I think either pre-Sale to Disney or Sale to Disney, right around there. But you get the kind of the heart of Ike Perlmutter and Avi Arad taking control of Marvel when it went bankrupt and Toy Biz bought Marvel. And you get Ike Perlmutter, the cheapest you-know-what out there, and just making a lot of decisions based upon just his own personal preference of cheap is better, this is more of a sure thing, don't do this, don't do that, and basically just yelling at people and just horrible. It was not a good thing. But at the same time, Ike let people like Joe Quesada, and a lot of people would debate and say that Joe Quesada didn't do a great job or whatever. The point is, he'd also make Quesada do certain things that maybe Quesada never wanted to do. And I think, and again, I'm not sure if Quesada was the one behind making Spider-Man single. I'm not sure if it was Ike Perlmutter, but things like that. But Ike Perlmutter was not necessarily the right creative force to be doing something like that for Marvel, okay? So think of it this way. You had a tyrant basically loading everyone up with lots of, I need this, I need that, this doesn't sell, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. There's no creative force behind with Ike. It's all business. And it was all the creative decisions were all based upon just a business mindset. Now, I know you need that with business, right? Except all that stuff, et cetera, but Ike was not someone you want to deal with as far as pushing Marvel. The Quesadas and all the writers, they were able to somehow work around that and still make good stories and make Marvel and still make do great things. And so what I'm trying to say is, with Ike, you have limited kind of resources of what you could do. And now what Disney is doing is they're putting someone who's a creative force in charge of Marvel, opposed to having just one person in charge of Marvel that is strictly all business. Now they will have a creative and a financial boss, like as they said, but let's also be real. They are pushing Ike Perlmutter out of here. He's essentially not even, it's by name only at this point. I mean, he's already stepped down. He's working for, and this is not a political saying what I'm going to say here, but he's working for the Trump administration. He's friends with Donald Trump, and he's not working day to day with Marvel issues as far as I know. So he's already kind of taken one step out, and he's not exactly a young guy either. So he's not going to be around for much longer, as far as he may retire soon or whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But my point is this, is that he's not going to be long for that position, even as financer. So Kevin being put in as equal, literally equal to Ike, is gigantic. The fact that now Kevin will be just instructing everything for comics, and obviously for, you know, the novels or whatever is going to be under Kevin. It's all the TV, all that stuff is going to be under Kevin. What I do think is interesting, and I don't know, and I'll be honest, as being a big Marvel fan on here, obviously of Marvel Studios, you know way more about Kevin than I do. And it sounds like Kevin loves comics, but doesn't love it as much as maybe we all think he might. He has a reference for the material. But
I think he loves it now, but I think it's not, you know, it wasn't his first love. Like he, you know, and he's even talked about before how he's become an even bigger Marvel fan over the process of making Marvel movies, even before there was Marvel Studios. Like he started, I mean, he knew about it. He respected it. He had things that he did collect some comics and he did collect some toys. It's not that he wasn't a fan at all. It's not like he's like,
right,
what's Marvel Comics? Oh, I'm making a movie about Marvel. Okay. Like, right, no, it wasn't that, but it's not. it's not his first love. And not that it needs to be. It's
exactly.
Just,
yeah.
The point to me is not the level of Kevin Feige's fandoms. It's really more just about
understanding the material.
Well, I think he understands the material, but understanding the material isn't the same as understanding the business, and the business is different. Now, you could say, well, financing and operations, that's still under Ike Perlmutter, but these things eventually go hand in hand. And, you know, and I don't think, you know, to steal a line from Cap via you, like, it, you know, you're not wrong. I mean, in that you look at this, it's like, okay, they can't get rid of Ike Perlmutter because he's a massive Disney shareholder as a result of Disney purchasing Marvel 10 years ago. So it's not the kind of thing where they can just dump the guy. They don't really have that as an option. He still gets to be the CEO of Marvel Entertainment. Yeah. But you do get to make decisions in terms of what exactly falls under his purview. So he can still have a job, just not as many responsibilities with that job as he's had. And now we've seen this process where the first thing that he lost control of and lost any authority over was the studio operation. Now he's lost complete control over television and animation operations, and he's lost a significant chunk of control over publishing now. It's weird to me that he still has like events and games under him. Like, that just doesn't make sense. I mean, what Marvel events does he need to be? Whatever. I still think of that stuff.
I think he threw him a bone. Honestly, I think that's what it comes.
But I think that stuff is still ultimately gonna go to Kevin Feige.
I agree.
So, yeah. I mean, in general, like I just think that, you know, to your point, he's not losing his job. He's just losing the responsibilities of his job. And so now, like, he's kind of got a shell of what he has had control of. That's all that's left. And eventually it will be nothing. And maybe he just gets paid to do nothing and makes money off of his Disney stock for nothing. And if that's the case, fine.
Yeah. So I think with all that said, I think here's what Kevin is going to do. And I think this would be the smart thing. I think Kevin is, I don't think it's going to change. The whole operation is going to change overnight. I don't think he's going to go in and say, I have an idea for comics and we're going to do all this stuff differently. I just don't see that happening. It just, Marvel has historically stayed pretty, the people who are in charge, you sometimes don't even know what to do with the comics. They just don't know. And they kind of are like, and they did kind of use Marvel for a baseball card company was in charge of Marvel, and they didn't know they were marketing selling these cards, and they thought it would be great or whatever, and then they just didn't know what else to do with it, and then they were stuck with all this stuff, they didn't know what to do with. So here's the thing though. So with Kevin, I think that what he's probably going to do is he'll have a hand in trying different things into the comic books. Like, he'll try different ideas he might be playing with and say, hey, I want to try this. I want to, you know, again, kind of like the breeding ground for real, real interesting ideas that he wants to try, because he's done a masterful job of adapting these comic books into films. And I think I've gone on record saying he's made improvements. And I think what he wants to do, it's basically like the minor leagues, if you will. And I really do think so. No. Stop it.
No. I was gonna make that point.
Yeah.
David,
you're our guest. Have at it. And then.
I was gonna say that this started to make sense to me when I thought about it in basically a baseball analogy, and where you think about the movies or the big leagues. And, you know, the comics will basically be the farm system. And, you know, just like a major league team, the general manager of the major league team still has control over what goes on in the farm system.
Yeah.
Because he knows what needs to happen up at the top. He can, you know, make trades for players. He can fill holes. And the other thing is, you know, Feige knows what's coming up. He knows what's going on way beyond, you know, what we currently know. And he can start seeding things in the comics to, you know, to see if they're working, to see what holds interest, so that when it's time to, you know, basically bring those characters or those ideas up to the big leagues, he has some idea about what he's going to get. And the other thing I think is that, you know, there was that whole issue with that supposedly in canon Thanos novel, which Feige said actually wasn't in canon. He can now actually maybe authorize some in canon novelizations or you know, prelude comics for movies that are coming up, and you can just start to make the entire Marvel world more cohesive, and just, you know, bring it all together and really connect it all.
I can tell you right now, I do not want the MCU connecting with the comic books. They need to be completely separate. And
I think there could be a separate label. I don't want the MCU connected to all comic books, and it won't be. Like, it's the thing that I still expect Kevin Feige and Marvel Studios in general to be very careful about, which is why they're, you know, they dance around the issue of whether or not you know, Avengers Damage Control, the new VR experience, which is awesome, by the way, and you can read my written review on MarvelStudiosNews.com. But it's the reason why, you know, when I went and did that experience and talked to, you know, the creatives afterwards, and Marvel Studios executive producer Dave Bouchard, who worked on it, you know, he gave a nice answer when I asked about whether or not it was canon, but didn't really say for sure that it is canon, and didn't really say for sure that it's not canon. And I think it's maybe because they're waiting to see how this goes. So officially, I don't think it's technically canon right this second. But the reason Marvel Studios is so careful about that, and why, you know, when it was initially reported that Thanos Titan Consumed the novel was canon, I mean, they immediately fired us and said, no, wait, it's not canon. They're very careful about it, and I think the reason Kevin Feige, or among the reasons Kevin Feige is so careful about that, is because the more story you tell, the more continuity you establish, and the more things you're going to be beholden to when you try to tell future stories, and as you try to avoid certain contradictions, that can ultimately inhibit some of your creativity. And so, you know, I don't think Feige is looking to put Marvel Studios in a position where the continuity expands so rapidly with stories that so much of the audience doesn't see. So, for example, Avengers Damage Control, the VR experience, not that many people, relatively speaking, are going to be able to experience that. So many people are not going to be able to go to a void location and play through this VR thing. So why, you know, if you're going to have a story that's canon, you want it to be accessible to a larger audience, and you also want to feel like a big enough chunk of the audience is actually going to go read it. You're not going to have this massive influx of comic book readers on the regular monthlies. So that I don't expect Marvel Studios to really touch that too much from a canon perspective. Could you have, instead of having the Prelude comics, which, you know, initially were introduced as a canon thing, but increasingly have shown that they're really not. And most of those comics now are recaps of previous movies more so than actually telling any new story anyway. So I think could there be meaningful canon in the MCU timeline comic books now with Kevin Feige overseeing this? I think he would be more comfortable with it, because part of the reason why Feige wouldn't have been comfortable with it up until now is he didn't have any creative oversight over publishing. So even if they're saying, like, these are canon, it's Marvel Comics editorial that ultimately gets to decide what was in those books. Now that Feige has authority over creative editorial, yes, that opens the door for MCU canon comics, but to avoid the issue of having too much continuity added too fast, I think what you do is you have limited series, or you have hardcover one-shot graphic novels that tell a story that's actually set in the MCU timeline. So you limit it, and you focus, you target those stories in specific areas that you are comfortable that you're not necessarily looking to go back to in movies or on Disney Plus, that can still be an entertaining story and be part of the timeline, but also not essential knowledge for people to understand the movies and the Disney Plus shows going forward. But that's already something that Marvel Studios knows how to manage, because they're able to manage the continuity of solo films that fewer people see and not have people being lost. The bigger audience that watches the Avengers movies be lost because they didn't watch Ant-Man or Ant-Man and the Wasp. So I think they know how to balance that, but part of that balance is still limiting how much continuity you're putting out there at a given time. So I do think it opens the door for MCU canon comics. It's just not going to be a flood. Most Marvel comics are still not going to be part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but to the point that you were getting at Paul and David, as you illustrated, I mean, the idea of Marvel Comics as something that's kind of a think tank for eventual movie or Disney Plus series adaptation, I mean, that idea has already been out there, not just for Marvel, but also for DC. I mean, comic books don't sell like they used to. They just don't. And I don't know how much Kevin Feige can really do about that. I do think there are opportunities that both DC and Marvel have missed over the years in terms of making their stories more accessible to the people who are actually watching the movies. Because I feel like if your interest in Marvel, as it is for so many people right now, and this is not a knock on them, however you get into Marvel, great. You know, animation was a huge part of how I got into Marvel. I'm pretty sure I was watching the 1982 Hulk cartoon or reruns of it because I was born in 83. I probably saw that before I was watching that before I knew how to read. So I definitely saw that before I read my first comic, maybe watched it before I even saw a comic book. So however you develop your interest in these characters is fine, but what we're not necessarily seeing is as these characters are more popular than ever in movies and in all these other, you know, these platforms with such high visibility, we're not really seeing that translate to a bunch of new comic book readers. And I think part of the reason why is because if you watch DC movies or Marvel movies, you go to the comic book shop and you pick something up and you're lost because you don't see anything that even looks like what you've been watching in the movies, because it's so far, the story has advanced so far past what you've been watching in the movies. And it's a tricky thing for comics to do. And I don't think they've been able to figure it out, because you still want to serve the comic book readers who've been here and have been loving this stuff, but you also want to be, ideally, you would think that you want to be appealing to a larger audience, and you want to be welcoming and inviting to a larger audience to get in and be able to see this stuff and invest in it and buy more comics. But if that's an idea, if that's still a goal, then maybe Kevin Feige will find a way to have at least some of the Marvel comic book line, even stuff that's not yet ever intended to be canon with the MCU, to be more accessible to a general audience that's not as familiar and not as entrenched in the Marvel comic book continuity. There is that to an extent, but there's also the other idea that for the comic book readers who are, and this maybe is the stronger idea, and this idea has been out there, is that maybe the idea of expanding the comic book buying audience is a lost cause, or maybe it's not even the most valuable pursuit for either of these companies, for Marvel or DC. There's been the thought that with these companies being so big, AT&T, which owns Warner, which owns DC, or Disney, which owns Marvel, that they can afford to take the hit. Even if comic books are a money loser for them, it's okay, because it's basically a corporate subsidized, it's a corporate subsidized development track for intellectual property. Mm-hmm. And yes, which is that minor league thing of, look, our movies are based on these things. And while we have thousands upon thousands of characters and stories to adapt from, not all of what's there is stuff that we want to mine. Not all of it is stuff that reflects some more modern sensibilities and tastes, and so we want to continue developing things. And mm-hmm. Marvel Studios particularly has shown a fondness for a lot of more recent material. Yes. Guardians of the Galaxy. Mm-hmm. The team that you know in the movies was established in, not the characters, but them together as a team, mm-hmm. was established in 2008. And by 2012, they announced the movie with that team. 4 years from them first becoming a team in the comic books to the announcement of a film and then only 2 years after that to the movie actually being in theaters. And less than 3 years after that before that thing became a ride at Disney California Adventure. So, you know, and that's not the only example. The Black Order, and that's a big one that I know Paul and I have hit on before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Thanos gets these new generals in Infinity in 2013. And they are in Infinity War in 2018.
Isn't Captain Marvel also more of a recent?
Yeah,
run?
The Captain
the
Marvel
Kelly
version
Sue,
of
the comic one.
Yeah, that's 2012.
Marvel to Captain Marvel.
Yeah, but most of what they pulled from was Captain Marvel stuff, not so much Miss Marvel era stuff.
And yes.
It's much more influenced by 2012 and more recent than it is anything before that. And then you look, and that's not it. I mean, Miss Marvel, not been around that long, got a Disney Plus series coming soon. You know, yep. There's a lot of stuff where Marvel is, they're not, They're not just going back to the 60s and then slowly catching up. They're pulling from everywhere. They're pulling from the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, the 2000s, and now the 2010s. They're pulling from everywhere. And so that means they want to keep having more stuff to potentially pull from. So, I mean, look, we're only finding out about this now. Who knows how long this has been in the works? Mm-hmm. Paul, you and I flagged it when Jonathan Hickman came back to Marvel and was going to work on X-Men. I mean, we did. We're like, well, Hickman developed a lot of, you know, some ideas that carried forward in Infinity War and Endgame, and now he's back on X-Men, and guess, just as Marvel Studios is finally getting their hands on X-Men, and so with House of X and Powers of X and now the main, you know, X title, like he's... It seems like maybe there's more stuff going on there, and there's stuff in those books. I'm not going to turn this into a comic book review show, not this episode anyway. Like, you know, I don't want to go through it, but there's definitely ideas that we've been talking about and speculating about with, you know, with our Patreon community on the Discord of like, hey, doesn't some of this stuff kind of seem like good workarounds for introducing the mutants into the MCU and giving them a history without necessarily like, you know, while also addressing the issue of how are you going to give them history when we haven't seen them be here the whole time? Like, there are different kinds of ideas in there that could potentially be relevant to Marvel Studios. And I think we'll just see more and more of that. But I don't necessarily think that that's a bad thing because, you know, I know some people say that, well, comic books should be their own thing and they should exist for their own purpose. And I don't disagree with that. But I also don't think that having comic books serve as IP development, corporate subsidized IP development, I don't think that's going to result in bad stories, because if your goal is to adapt these into successful feature films and streaming series, how are you going to do that if you're adapting from a bunch of stories that suck? You know, you're going to have a hard time doing that. So Kevin Feige, is quality is going to matter to him. He's going to want really good stories. And one last thing, and then I promise I'll shut up. For Kevin Feige, look at the talent that he's attracted that wants to come in and work with Marvel Studios. Go back to it from this year. Two-time Academy Award winner Mahershala Ali, he's the one calling Marvel Studios because he wants to work with them. Kevin Feige attracts talent. People want to work with this guy because he's talented and smart, and they trust him. Marvel's actually been losing a lot of talent in recent years in comic books. I mean, it's a win to bring back Jonathan Hickman, but they lose Brian Michael Bendis. Other people have left. I mean, Hickman also left temporarily, and I know now he's back, but he left for a bit. Marvel's been losing talent to DC and to just indie books and everything else. They've been losing a lot of their talent. Maybe Kevin Feige attracts some of that talent back. Maybe he also attracts talent that hasn't even been working in comic books. You know, you know, screenwriters, other people who think, you know, I kind of want to work with Marvel stuff. And maybe for them, it's about working in comics for the sake of working in comics. Maybe it's about, you know, potentially working in comics as a way to potentially progress to screenwriting for Marvel Studios at some point. And even if you say, well, if that sucks, if they don't want to write comics for the sake of writing comics, well, guess what? They're not going to be able to get to the next step if their comic books suck. So you're still going to require great quality at every step of the way in order for this to be successful, whatever the reason is, whether it's to sell more comics, create more ideas for adaptation for movies and series, or for writers to come in to write comics with the goal of potentially being able to write other stuff for Marvel Studios, whatever the motivation, it all still will come in order for that to be successful and work out. It's going to require an emphasis on quality, and Kevin Feige is good at telling high quality stories and overseeing the telling of high quality stories. So I still think, regardless of the motivation that you look at, this is going to ultimately be, I think this is still going to be a very good thing for Marvel Comics.
Remember that there's been a lot of writers that have come from comics and done screenwriting. I mean, it's countless. I mean, Jerry Conway is a great example. He's one of the greatest comic writers, I think. He's one who wrote The Death of Gwen Stacy. He's the first writer to take over for Stan Lee. He's written a ton of Law and Order, like, you know, episodic things, and he's done tons and tons of stuff. And I think that you hit on something, a couple points, Sean, that I think are huge. And I think one of them is the fact that comic books should be bigger than what they are. I mean, I started a podcast because I feel like there's just not a lot of people there's a lot of people who love these characters and want to get into comics, but they don't know where to go. They don't know where to start. And I think that that's kind of the problem. I've been wondering why they don't promote the comics more, like through the films, as far as like, again, even commercials before the movie starts or something like that, like promote the Marvel subscription services or whatnot. And you hit on something with Kevin that is interesting, because maybe that's why he wants to take control of Marvel, not just of just the films, but he wants to get his hands on promoting everything of Marvel, whereas comes the characters and the comics and the toys and things like that, to make it really substantial and not just to have it all connected, but again, making the company and the characters live and breathe. And I'll be honest, the movies will eventually die out, but the comics will have always been there. They've been there since the high points of the 90s and the 80s to the low points of the 90s and where it went bankrupt. So, and the comics have persisted. They've stayed alive. And like you said, there's so much they've taken from the recent comic books that you, again, it's a think tank of ideas. And it is, you, if you're going to make a movie, all right, if you're going to pay these people to write scripts and things like that anyway, to come up with brand new story ideas. And whereas now you can already have these writers already in hand and say, okay, you've already written this Winter Soldier story. Now adapt that for the MCU. Now adapt this. Now Kevin can say, I want to try this kind of idea for this kind of character. I want to, you know, let's do this. Let's try that. And I think that there's a lot to be done with that. And I think that Marvel and promoting the comic books is a huge portion of, I think, Marvel sustaining itself long term. These films are yeah, they keep churning out things, and as long as they keep having fresh material, it needs fresh ideas. And the comic books have, let's be real, a lot of the comic books have been fresh ideas. They're not just things that you can just do whenever. You have to have a little bit more creative juices and a little bit of the freedom to do that. And comic books, it offers a great medium to do that, even more so than I think the novels, because novels, you have to keep, you know, writing and editing, whereas with comic books, it's 22 pages, get it to your artist, you know, designs it, gets out to the inker. It's more of a, again, it's more of a conveyor belt to an extent, again, to where it's multiple people coming in and adapting and doing their own work on this 22 page or whatever comic book. And again, you have the serial idea of keeping people on the edge of their seats and wanting to keep buying the issues. Look at them. And we all know it's not like comic, and you're not saying this, but it's not like comic books are completely, you know, barely make money. They do make some money. They're not huge money makers. Right. And that's the thing, is that, again, look at Immortal Hulk right now. It's a top selling book for Marvel. Like, owns like most of the top 5-10 books. Like, Marvel's number one.
Yeah, but and the difference is the size of the market. Top-selling books sell tens of thousands of copies now. They used to sell millions of copies, and then hundreds of thousands, and now most of the top sellers are down to tens of thousands.
But we don't know what, and again, I'm not sure if that's counting digital sales, and that's just counting paper sales. So that's another thing. I'm curious. They're not releasing.
I mean, I don't think it multiplies it by that much. I mean, even if you double it, it still shows that even if you say that print sales only account for half of all comic book sales, and I would say that it's probably not that much of a split. But even if you say that, then double it, and the numbers still don't point to you know, this overwhelming success for the comic book market. But that's okay if it serves this other purpose. If comic book fans still get comic books to read and they are good comics, while at the same time Marvel Studios and DC, because they're doing this too, this isn't just a Marvel thing, this is an industry thing. If the makers of these movies are getting more stories, and there are good stories from which they can adapt and extract ideas that can be adapted, turned into different things for different stories and films, and put, you know, take a piece from this story, a piece from that story, because that's the way they do it. And these adaptations are not like for like of any particular book. So if that happens, then it's a win-win. It's good for everybody. And as I said, I mean, it's not just because some of this stuff might be subsidized IP development going forward. And I mean, in a lot of ways, it already is. It's like we're already there in a lot of respects. It's not like we're going there. We're there in a lot of ways. And so... Mm-hmm. That's not a bad thing, as long as the stories are good. And the stories have to be good. Otherwise, you're adapting from a bunch of crap, and that's not helpful.
Right. And Sean, you had mentioned, too, that about bringing talent in and things like that. And I will say right now the comic industry is in a weird state, because all these writers like Rick Remender, Ed Brubaker, they've left the big two because Image and these other creators have more – it's more lucrative for them to do these things.
Yeah, they're making more money.
Exactly. They're making more money and they own the IP that they're creating. So like a Jeff Lemire makes rights and helps create the Descender. He can sell that to a Netflix or whatever, a Mark Millar. Mm-hmm. They can create these things on Image Comics, own the IPs and whatnot. What I'm curious, and again, going back to what you said, you bring up a great point. Kevin Feige could be going in not just to like, again, mine ideas. I think you hit on something that I think he's going to try to help the whole publishing out and really make it, again, lucrative for talent to come back. Again, not just commissions, but where if they do create a new character for Marvel, what does that happen? Can they rise up the ranks? Again, you brought up, again, another great point. What can he do to develop not just the characters, but the writers and all of that? So, and again, the artists, let's be real. There's tons of artists that are comic book artists that have gone on and done or now work for a design. Killian Plunkett. He drew comics back in the 90s, and now he's a design artist for Lucasfilm for Star Wars Rebels and for Clone Wars.
Andy Park, who's the director of visual development at Marvel Studios, he came from a comic book background.
There you go. So I guess for me is you're right. I think it's going to be a farm system in a sense to where it's going to lure some people back potentially. And I'm curious. I don't think if Kevin didn't want the comic books, he wouldn't want the comic books. The fact he took publishing is a big deal for me, and I'm very curious what he does. I think it's a great point.
You're right. It means he wants it, and he has to want it for a reason.
Yeah, so I think that the editors and all that, they're the ones who kind of are steering the ship. And C.B. Sabusky, granted for his weird things that he's done in the past that are very, very odd, I'm not going to defend that. I do like the direction where Marvel Comics are going right now. I feel like they're acknowledging the past, the writers of the past, and also acknowledging the future. And I feel that they're headed the right direction. And now with Kevin and CB working together, and again, maybe he'll get kicked out like tomorrow. Who knows? I don't know. But where they're going, I'm very curious what Kevin could do with publishing. Because like I said, he took it for a reason. And I really hope it's to make the comics more of a substantial thing in the market, in entertainment market in general, because I love comics and that's the lifeblood of these characters, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think it's, look, if the result is great stories and perhaps better stories on a more consistent basis, and I do think that would be the goal for Kevin Feige. I don't think he wants, you know, he doesn't want hollow, superficial stories that are half-hearted because, oh, we might throw this at the wall and make a movie out of it one day. That's not helpful to him, so that's not going to be – there's no reason that he would want that. I do think he is going to try and do his best to help and oversee things. And look, there's only so much time he can dedicate to the comics, right? I mean, there's only so – I mean, look at all the other stuff he's overseeing. It remains to be seen exactly how hands-on he's going to be with comic books anyway. I mean, I do think he wanted it for a reason. I do think he has plans, and I do think he's going to help, and I do think he's going to help in terms of quality and help, you know, grow that business while also keeping it alive in terms of, you know, creating ideas that turn into movies and help keep these characters in the public conversation, which can hopefully start feeding back into comic book sales more than it actually has. But maybe it will if some of those stories, you know, some of the stories available in the comic books are more reflective of what people are seeing in the movies. So that way they feel like they're a little more invested in it and can actually get into it a little bit better than maybe they can now. But there's still only going to be a limit to how much he can do with that. But as with the film and television stuff, I trust him with it. What were you going to say, David?
A couple things that I was thinking of. I almost forgot that I was not that I was on the podcast. I'm just so used to listening to you guys. So I think if you think about how Feige handles the movies, you know, you have all the directors say he's not the kind of guy who comes in and takes over. And,
right.
You know, he's there for when they need a creative voice or a creative direction.
Mm-hmm.
And then he lets the people who he hires do their thing. And I feel like he will apply that same work ethic to the comics. You know, he's not taking over Dan Buckley's job. He's just now who the person he's reporting to. So, you know, it's not like Feige's coming in to retool the entire Marvel comic line. I'm sure he'll be there as a creative voice to maybe to direct some things. But, you know, he'll let those people do what they're good at. And insert himself when maybe he feels like he needs to, but otherwise, right. You know, we'll let them do what they're good at.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. It's not like he has time to come in and be like, hey, page 18 of Squirrel Girl this month needs work. Like, he doesn't have that kind of time.
Yeah, and I also wonder if, you know, the way that he's been really trying to insert diversity into the movies, I wonder if part of this also could be him trying to insert more diversity into the comics as well. I mean, I think they've been better than in recent years, but it's just something that comes to mind.
Yeah, well, I think Marvel Comics has actually done a pretty good job of that in recent years. They've really done they've become even more inclusive than, I mean, the movies actually have some catching up to do with what the comics have been doing in the recent years in my book, but making sure that initiative stays, you know, is still very important. Having more oversight of those stories in ways that also translate to those characters having opportunities with greater visibility, as we talked about in the movie side and the streaming side. But, you know, I from a bigger picture perspective on this, not specific to the comics or the films or streaming and everything else. Like, from a big picture perspective, I just think I like this idea of Marvel being a more cohesive operation. And I like the idea of this getting back to being one Marvel, but under the right leadership. And, you know, 'cause it's been, you know, these last few years, it's almost been kind of weird. Like, there's Marvel Studios and then there's Marvel Entertainment, and you know, it's almost like there's a rivalry, and you know, and there kind of was. I mean, not everybody was happy about the split in 2015, and there's probably people who are not happy about this. You know, anybody who wasn't happy with Feige and Marvel Studios for moving out of the rest of Marvel Entertainment, any of those people who are still around, probably not happy that they, you know, somewhere on the corporate chain, it leads them up to Kevin Feige, you know, either being their boss or their boss's boss or their boss's boss's boss. So I, you know, not everybody probably within the Marvel company is going to love this, but Kevin Feige has proven himself. He has been the most effective leader within the Marvel organization, regardless of what branch it is, be it studios, comics, television, whatever. He's been the most successful. He's been the most consistent. He's led the most consistent unit from a creative and business perspective. And so I think it's only right that he is the best person for this job. If you want to bring Marvel back together and you want to try and have one person or one team overseeing the entire creative operation across, you know, those main business units of feature films, live action, television / streaming, animation, and comic books and other publishing, like, that's, you know, the person to lead that team, the person who's most qualified is Kevin Feige. And so I really like the idea of having it be under his vision. But before we sum up with the rest of your overall thoughts, we got to get to one last bit that we've missed so far, and that is Jeff Loeb. I don't know what this means for him. I mean, he wasn't mentioned in any of the articles today. Well, he wasn't mentioned in the original article on Deadline, even as they were laying out other executives who still had their job and maybe were just changing who exactly they reported to. Although most of it's the same, it's really just Dan Buckley. But Jeff Loeb has been the head of Marvel Television. I mean, he's obviously got a huge background as a comic book writer. He was a screenwriter before he was writing comic books, but he's been prolific as a comic book writer. And even as an executive, he was doing a lot, I think, if I remember correctly, in Marvel Animation before doing a lot more now in Marvel live action television in recent years. And, you know, now he's in this position where he's the head of Marvel Television. Marvel Television is now being moved over to Kevin Feige and Marvel Studios, and there's no mention of Jeff Loeb. So it's only natural to wonder what exactly this means for him. The Hollywood Reporter, that their article mentioned him by name, but only to say that there's no word on what his status is. And so I guess nothing would surprise me at this point. You know, maybe he'll still have a big executive role within Marvel Television under, you know, television projects under Kevin Feige. Maybe he'll lead a Disney Plus series or some Disney Plus series. Maybe he'll lead animation for Kevin Feige under the Marvel Studios banner, because that's something that, that Jeff Loeb has some background in as well. Maybe he'll write comics for Marvel again. I don't really know, but I also can't say I'd be shocked if within the next few days or maybe weeks at the most that we find out that Jeff Loeb is leaving Marvel. And that's not a knock on Jeff Loeb, by the way. It's not my way of saying, oh, he'd be petty if he leaves. We don't even know if there's, you know, if there's a job for him. And even if there is a job for him, if Jeff Loeb has a leadership position as the head of Marvel Television and he loses most of that authority and responsibility to somebody else, and then he is perhaps offered, you know, a position without as much responsibility, without as much authority, that feels like a step down career-wise, if Jeff Loeb wasn't happy about that and didn't want to stick around to take on that new position, if there was even anything being offered, it would only mean he's human. It's not a knock on him whatsoever to say if he doesn't stick around with Marvel that he's being, even if Marvel offers him a different job and he doesn't take it, that he's being petty or anything like that. He wouldn't be. You know, if you say like, okay, if you don't want me to do the job that I was doing, if you decide that my results weren't good enough and you'd rather go in another direction with somebody else, fair for you to do that. Business is business. But that also means it's fair for me to decide that the next role you might be offering me isn't what I feel is the right fit for me. And so I'm going to go elsewhere. And if he decides to do that, that's totally okay. But for Disney, because, I mean, Disney supplied this information to the trades, because some of them even phrase it as Disney announced. So that means there was at least a notice that got sent to the trades. If they, if Jeff Loeb is omitted from that as they're laying out these other executives who are still in place, when Jeff Loeb is, as I said, it's only natural for us, it's the one of the most natural questions is what does this mean for Jeff Loeb? The fact that he's not mentioned means that, in my eyes, it either means that it's bad news that they don't want to say because it takes away, you don't want bad news to chip away at the exciting news you're trying to put out there of Kevin Feige getting all this additional responsibility. So it's either bad news or there's no news to report yet because it's still being figured out what Jeff Loeb's role is going to be and if there's going to be a role at all, and that that's still being assessed at this point. But as I said, I mean, I won't be surprised if Jeff Loeb is sticking around in a different role, but also just won't be shocked even a little bit if we find out that his time at Marvel is wrapping up.
Go ahead, David, if you want to chime in with Mr. Loeb.
I don't have too much to say, but I just think that he's kind of the unfortunate character in all this, because in order to pull Marvel Television under Kevin Feige, you know, that was his job. So it's a little unfortunate for him. I don't know if it's hard to see what kind of position he would have now under Feige if he's not going to be running things. You know, it's hard to go from number one to number two. I guess, you know, Your guess is as good as mine as to what happens to him.
I think that with Jeff Loeb, again, he wrote Commando. He was a screenwriter. He was brought into comic books. I think if I was reading this correctly, I was reading the Challengers of the Unknown, and him and Tim Sale's first work together was that book. And I was reading in the liner notes of the comic, and they talked about how they brought the screenwriter in that loved the character. So Jeff Loeb loves comics. You talk about Kevin Feige's first love was film. Jeff Loeb, I believe, is a giant, or always has been a giant comic fan. And the thing with Jeff Loeb is that he's also a great comic writer. Obviously, we all know the Long Halloween.
Yep.
We all know the Daredevil yellow, Spider-Man blue, Hulk gray, all that stuff. All Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale, obviously. But Jeff Loeb also has I've read a lot of Jeff Loeb stuff. I've met Jeff Loeb back in the mid 90s when, in fact, I am positive it was him and Tim Sale were at Everett Comics and Cards in Washington, and that's a comic store I went to, and I was the only one there because I was going to buy my comics, and I forgot that they had like Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale, because Tim Sale lives in, I think, Seattle. So, and even at that time, or maybe it was in Portland, but anyway, they were both there. And I remember when I was there, just kind of hanging out, Jeff Loeb walking behind me, just chatting away. Very nice man. I even asked him about Cable and X-Force because he was writing Cable and X-Force at the time. And I asked him about Mr. Tolliver. Anyway, I've read a lot of Jeff Loeb comics, and he's a good writer. He's always been a solid to good writer. And obviously he's done some seminal great work, and I think he's a phenomenal creative talent, and I think he's done a decent job on the television aspect too. Obviously, I felt like he was mainly a comic writer and then got brought back into television. It felt like back in the Heroes era. If you remember the Heroes TV show, mm-hmm. Tom Kring, I think his name is, brought him in as a kind of like a consultant kind of person and a producer because he wanted to have a kind of a comic book person on there, not because of, you know, whatever, but just kind of have like some kind of help. They're not trading too much, whatever. My point is that he got kind of lured back into it, kind of happenstance. And I feel that you're right, Sean, that it's only human to not want to take somebody like a demotion. But what I hope what would happen is Kevin can maybe convince Jeff to stay on a part of Marvel in some way. And again, writing comic books again, like, I would be awesome. He's, again, Jeff Loeb was writing great comic books for DC back in like the mid 2000s. Superman, Batman comics were very, very good. I read that stuff. It was great. He's a rock star in the comic industry. Dude's like, he's legit. And now would I be curious if he would become more creative in the comic book, maybe he would be a bigger voice in the creative and developing that talent and things like that. He'd be amazing at that. And so, granted, but if he wants to work in television, because that's where the money is, I understand that too. So I don't know. For me, what I would love for Jeff to do is come back to comics, because he's an amazing talent, creative talent. And I'm not saying his creative talent was wasted on these TV shows, but I just think that he's got such a great comic mind. I would love for him to develop future stories for the MCU with the comic books. But again, I don't know if he wants. I could also see him, like you said, Sean, going to DC. Maybe DC would use him in a capacity, because they have all kinds of projects going on. And
I mean, they have all kinds of projects, but also, I mean, you know, it's executive jobs are tough to come by, you know, in a lot of this stuff, yeah. Because, you know, some of the stuff is going through different forms of consolidation and evolution, and just, you know, I don't know. I don't know if there's always another place to go. But I mean, at this point, Jeff Loeb is also very, very experienced and has produced a lot of episodes of television. So I'm sure the dude can get a job. Like, it's not, it doesn't have to be Marvel or DC. And look, I also like Jeff Loeb. I mean, I had a chance to meet him at the Daredevil premiere a number of years ago, and he was very nice and very gracious. And, you know, even though it was a Marvel night, I had to talk to him for a second about how much I love The Long Halloween, my favorite Batman comic book. And so, like, Dark Victory, the sequel to that, is also great. So, yeah, I mean, I have a lot of admiration for Jeff Loeb and his talent as a storyteller. And even though, I have said, that, you know, the Marvel television stuff, it hasn't always been consistent, there's also been great stuff. And so I can't – it's not like – Jeff Loeb has just been the worst at Marvel Television. He's had some wins there, just also had some losses. And so I do think this is somebody who still has something to offer. Whether or not that's a good fit for everybody involved, including him, you know, that kind of stuff isn't up to me. And so I don't want to make any assumptions ahead of time of exactly what's going to happen, or depending on what happens, you know, who was right or wrong in the situation. Ultimately, though, it is, like anything else, it is a results-based business, and the results for Marvel Television haven't been as strong as the results for Marvel Studios. And so if that means that Jeff Loeb isn't going to have a role going forward, I get that. But I also, as I said, I think that if – I do think he still has something to contribute if there's a role for him that Marvel thinks he'd be great at, that Marvel has for him, and that he would also be potentially interested in. But getting back to the bigger picture here, or actually before we sum up here, our final thoughts on this, just want to say thank you very much to Jennifer Sims. She's the latest member of our Patreon community. So we have this Patreon, which if you've been listening to the show, you probably are aware of by now. But we have a Patreon that features exclusive content that's not available anywhere else. So we do Patreon credit scenes where we take a main episode like this one, and then we talk about an additional subject. So we're going to talk about some of the Scorsese stuff briefly on the Patreon credit scene. So I know there's a lot that's already been said about it, but I'm sure we all have some feelings that we would like to share on it. So we're going to talk about that in our Patreon credit scene for this week's episode. But we also do Q&A shows every week. And some of the exclusive content that we have, like the Patreon credit scenes and the ability to listen to the Q&A shows, that's available starting at just $1 a month for the exclusive content. But we also have, at some of our slightly higher tiers, we have a Patreon-exclusive Discord community where Paul and I are over there, David's over there. We're always having great conversations talking about Marvel every single day, whether it's text or voice chat. Had a pretty lengthy voice chat in the wake of this Kevin Feige news earlier today. So that's a lot of fun, and all kinds of other exclusive commentary tracks. The Marvel Unlimited Book Club, where we talk about comics. We also have the Daily Bugle, where Monday through Friday I'm breaking down the news. Any Marvel-related news that comes up. So lots of stuff, lots of exclusives. And if you are part of our Patreon and you are getting exclusive content, you do get your own private RSS link that you can put into a podcatcher like Apple Podcasts, which allows you to get all of your content from Marvel Studios News all in one place. You're not tracking down different types of shows across multiple feeds. It's all there for your convenience. So for more information on the tiers that we have available, please visit patreon.com/Marvel Studios News. Getting back to our topic on hand as we wrap this up, as it for me, I like the idea of there being one Marvel, and if there's someone to lead it, the most qualified individual at Marvel across two coasts. That's one other subject we didn't talk about. Might be moving day at Marvel. I mean, I don't want anybody in New York to be displaced, and I'm not rooting for that. But at the same time, this happened with DC a few years ago, is that their publishing operation moved from New York to Los Angeles, where everybody else was. And now that Feige is overseeing creative and editorial on comic books, it would not surprise me if there's a move of the rest of Marvel out to the LA area. Probably, I don't think there's space for them on the Disney lot, but maybe on the Glendale campus for Disney. Maybe we would see, maybe they'd head over there. But too early to speculate on whether or not that's actually going to happen or not. But I like the idea of Marvel being a more unified operation again across all of the different ways that they make and distribute content. And as I said, Kevin Feige, there's no one better qualified to be the one to, if there's going to be one Marvel creative operation going forward, Kevin Feige is the best person to lead it.
Yeah, I think that this whole thing is for the better. And I think that having a creative head, again, looking at the DC comics and DC, you know, what's going on over there, they don't really have, a big vision going forward, kind of like with Feige now, if he's overseeing everything, the movies. And again, that's kind of a feather in our cap. And as far as Marvel goes, because Kevin is, he has a vision. And I think that if there's one thing that he's been shown, or he's shown everyone, whether it's movies or whatever, is that he's got a vision. And I think that is ultimately so important in any kind of structure of whatever it be, creative or a massive corporate structure. You need to have a vision, you need a plan, and you need to be able to make the altercation or the alterations, if you will, excuse me, or and the deviations if you need to, but also have a overarching plan and execution of that plan and knowing it's going to work and it working. And he's shown that over 10 years and something that no one else has achieved. And I feel that's what makes him special. He's in tune with what people might want and what want to see. And from a creative standpoint with these characters. And I think that him being the head of Marvel will only help every aspect of the company, including the comics, including the films, the TV series, and whatever else happens outside of that. He will make that vision come to life and perhaps make all those other things that maybe aren't as big, bigger. And I'm hoping that I'm right, or I hope that he's right, and I hope he does, because I'm a giant comic book fan, and I want the medium to blow up even more than it has. And with these characters that were birthed from the comic books, the comic book should be bigger than what it is, like you said, Sean. So I'm really hoping Kevin can somehow use this to, and again, he's not just taking over publishing, that's all he's going to do, but I would love for him to help build the comic books back up to where, you know, comic books being this giant thing again. So we'll see. But yeah, I think this is only good news, in my opinion.
It's me.
Yeah, you get the final word.
Cool. So, just to kind of reiterate some of the things you guys said, Marvel's thing really, you know, everyone's talking about what Marvel does versus what DC's does. Marvel's thing really is – the big interconnected universe. And I think with everything, all live action things being under Feige now, he can actually direct how that all happens and how to make things more connected, and also share information. And we didn't really touch on this a lot, but I remember when Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was the episode around Infinity War.
Yeah.
Infinity War was coming out, and it kind of seemed like they were trying to tie it into Infinity War, but once Infinity War came out, it was kind of clear that Marvel TV knew just about as much as we did.
Yeah.
Learned everything from the trailers.
Yeah, I think if I remember correctly, Infinity War had already been out.
Okay.
It was the second to last episode of season 5 that ends with a reference of Thanos is attacking Earth.
Right.
And then so everybody thought, okay, so are we going to get the next week in the season finale? Are we going to see the snap or anything? And of course, there was no snap. And the entire episode continues on, even though we know when Thanos attacked Earth, like it wasn't that much longer until half of Earth died. And so half the universe died. And so there was some reaction of if the second to last episode of the season had seemingly had an Infinity War reference, why didn't the season finale have, also reference Infinity War? Well, they couldn't because they didn't know what happened in Infinity War. And so it's, that there obviously wasn't any communication, and because the two sides weren't really working together, and there probably wasn't trust. Maybe Marvel Studios being super paranoid about spoilers getting out for Infinity War Endgame weren't going to share those results, which is why Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. just even for anyone wanting to cling to the idea that show might still be canon, it didn't even really have a chance to be with season 5.
It was just clear that one side wasn't getting the entire story.
Yeah.
And all these red carpet shows and whatever, the press is always asking Feige, is Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. going to show up? Or the Netflix heroes are going to show up? Or are these people from this show going to show up? And, he basically was forced to give his classic Feige non-answer, or it seemed like, he never wanted to talk about it, or he just couldn't give an honest answer. And I wonder if that was a little embarrassing for him, just to say that he doesn't know, because he is kind of the face of Marvel. But I think with all this going on with this reorganization, when he gets those questions now, he can plan for it, and he can actually confidently say that, yes, everything that you're seeing in the movies and in TV and on Disney Plus or wherever these shows are going to show up, yes, it's all connected now, and he can make sure that actually happens.
Yeah, I think the unification of, obviously information will flow much more freely. So there is that benefit. But also, when he would give the answers about the Defender showing up or Coulson coming back or whatever in the movies, it was he fell back on the logistics excuse, which is a very real excuse. The demands of television versus the demands of movies are very, very different, especially the more traditional network model that Marvel had been working with, or even Netflix's model. These things were, Marvel Television was developing things as TV shows, and then of course trying to find ways to connect them to the larger movie universe. But because the television shows are moving at a certain pace, and the movies are moving at a completely different pace, and one side is making one thing and another side is making another thing, each making things based on their very different sets of priorities and schedules, it's hard to, it's prohibitively difficult to try and make everything sync up. But the difference with the Disney Plus shows, and I think, and anything else Marvel Studios might do as things move under one banner, of things all being, really finally being all connected, the difference is that things are developed in advance of where they're going to fit in the timeline, which is why you're not, we have how many different Disney Plus? We have several different Disney Plus series announced at this point. I think we have like 7 or 8. I think like 8, including What If. So we have all these different, we have all of these different shows, and so, but the difference is we're not really looking at it in terms of Falcon and Soldier season 1, Falcon and Winter Soldier season 2, and everything. We're just looking at Falcon and Winter Soldier as a limited series, and then WandaVision as a limited series. And some of these might get another limited run, but they're all being planned in ahead of time for where they're going to fit in the timeline, and it's based on that and where they fit in the overall story, and it's not so much based on the usual demands of television, which is we got to do season one and then we got to do season two and everything has to be on this schedule. It's all being incorporated into one schedule, and I think that's going to allow things to be more consistent and be more impactful in terms of the Disney Plus series actually being connected in a true and meaningful way to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And now that Marvel Studios, there's not really going to be a Marvel television banner. It's just Marvel Studios, that everything will be paced at a way that is effective for Marvel Studios in being able to keep this, universe together and really have just one Marvel moving forward. Plus whatever the hell it is that that Sony's doing. But that's where we're going to go ahead and wrap up this episode. We're going to talk about Scorsese, as I said, on the Patreon credit scene. But make sure you're following along with us everywhere you can. The website, marvelstudiosnews.com, Facebook and Instagram at Marvel Studios News, and on Twitter at Marvel Newscast. David, where can everybody find you? If you want them to. If you don't, you can tell them to get the hell out. It's fine.
Well, they can follow me. I may not respond if they, you know, talk shit. I'm on Twitter at Rosensmind, R-O-S-E-N-S Mind, and also Instagram at Rosens Eye.
Nice. Paul, let everybody know where they can find P-Thug.
You can find P-Thug on Twitter at Herman22 with two N's, and also on Instagram, same thing, Herman22 with two N's. Also follow my podcast, The Saga Continues, Blaster Cannon, and the new Comic Binge podcast with my buddy Chris Clow. And I will see you next time.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Mr. Sean Gerber, Sean spelled S-E-A-N. You can also check out my Star Wars podcast with our good friend John Beerley. That's at Fandalorians on Twitter, or just Fandalorians wherever you get your podcasts. So for Paul and David, I'm Sean. Thanks as always for listening. See you next time.